Sequenza 5 for solo trombone. George Ligeti directed that his poem symphonique for 100 metronomes should already have started before the audience arrives. So, over now to the Royal Albert Hall.
Thank you. Luciano Berio's Sequenza No. 5, played here at the Royal Albert Hall by Byron Fulcher. Well, I say played. It was more sang, acted, spoken, and dramatised here, and in a full clown costume here. Wasn't that spectacular, that outfit here? Not, of course, something that radio listeners can see. That performance of Sequenza No. 5 was preceded by George Ligeti's poem Symphonique for 100 metronomes, that piece that began as a chaotic rhythmic cloud and ended with that melancholy tick of the last metronome standing. Now, both those pieces are the absurd but deadly serious, the playful but profound upbeat to tonight's concert from the London Sinfonietta and the young players of the London Sinfonietta Academy Ensemble. And you too, the audience here at the Royal Albert Hall, because before the evening is out, you are going to be required to contribute to tonight's performance via the medium of your mobile phones. However, I'd ask you not to turn them on just yet. You will be directed to, after the performance of John Cage's famously non-silent, silent piece, 433. I won't give the whole mystery away just now. It's got something to do with composer Matthew Herbert, who sat here on stage at the Royal Albert Hall, who will be recording and remixing the performances we're going to hear. So some great pieces of post-war music coming up from Jonathan Harvey and Louis Andreessen, and that performance of Cage's 433 as well. But we start, though, the next piece we're going to hear is by Greek composer Yannis Xenakis, a piece called Phlegra that he wrote in 1975 for the London Sinfonietta themselves. And I'm delighted to be joined on stage here by Andre de Ridder, tonight's conductor. Andre, welcome.
Hello, thank you.
Look, what are we going to hear in the next quarter hour of music? Because this is a piece that's got a sort of mythic, even potentially Olympian theme. What happens in this piece?
Well, the title Phlegra refers to the Greek word Phlegra, which the meaning of which is it is the battlefield between the Titans and the new Olympic gods. So this is where a new cast of gods is taking over.
Like Mo Farah and Usain Bolt.
Absolutely. Now, as to what happens in this piece, there's no clear narrative as such that would describe this famous battle, but certainly there are musical elements that battle it out in this piece. And as to who wins or as to who are the new Olympic gods, I leave that up to you, but there's certainly a sort of element of technocracy taking over in some way, because you have this element of almost stochastic repeated notes this piece.
Stochastic, what do you mean? Like built on what, mathematical principles?
Almost like, well, yes, but it's almost like, it sounds like a Morse code, but of course he calculated it, layering these different pulses on top of each other, and they keep creeping in during the piece, and then at the end there is a section where this kind of motif takes over completely.
It's really virtuosic music, which is written absolutely for these players as they were in 1975, which, having heard the rehearsals of today, they still play brilliantly. Now, at the very end of Xenakis' Phlegra, you're going to be plunged into darkness here at the Royal Albert Hall for a performance of Jonathan Harvey's tape piece, Mortuus Plango Vivos Voco, I Lament the Dead and I Call the Living. The title comes from the biggest bell, an inscription on the biggest bell of Winchester Cathedral, and the sounds you'll hear in the 9 minutes of Mortuus Plango Vivus Voco are from the bell itself and from Dominic Harvey, Jonathan's son, who was a chorister at Winchester Cathedral at the time. So that coming up immediately after Phlegra. But now, just before we hear Phlegra, I'm going to invite the musicians of the London Sinfonietta to tune before Andre de Ridder conducts them in Yannis Xenakis' Phlegra.
Thank you.
Jonathan Harvey's Mortuus Plango, Vivus Voco, I lament the dead, I call the living, magicked into the space of the Royal Albert Hall here tonight by the sonic magicians of Sound Intermedia. Now, the next piece we're going to hear on tonight's programme from the London Sinfonietta and the London Sinfonietta Academy Ensemble, young players who for the last 4 years have get the chance to play alongside the professionals of the Sinfonietta, is a piece by Dutch composer Louis Andriessen, who is making his way on stage here at the Royal Albert Hall. A round of applause, please, for one of our greatest living composers, Louis Andriessen.
You know what pop artists in Holland arrived and finally on their grand tour in one of these beautiful halls we have in Amsterdam, and they say, like I do now, beautiful reception. I'm so happy to be back in Brussels.
You do know where you are. Well, you have a busy touring schedule.
I know where I am.
You
I
do?
Where
roughly? Okay. Look, the piece we're going to hear, the Snellheit, Velocity. Now, thinking about the Ligeti piece we heard right at the start, which was all about that chaotic, rhythmic, you know, cloud getting slower and slower until that very melancholy moment, the final metro. In a way, this piece reverses that process in terms of time. I mean, it gets faster and faster and faster. I mean, is this sort of as simple as saying it does what it says on the tin, it gets quicker for 18 minutes, or what's happening in the Snellheit?
Yeah, in fact, that is the most important subject. It's called velocity, but I think the real subject is slowness. That's the problem, because we learn from the percussion. I should explain the whole situation also, but in fact, the slow movement wins the piece. And there are all kinds of little strange things. What happens is you see three orchestras.
Who were assembling in this one huge group behind us, yeah?
Yeah, but in fact there are three orchestras. There are two kind of jazz bands, they are identical. There's in the middle a kind of symphony orchestra, a little symphony orchestra. But the main voices are the percussion. At the left and at the right you find two percussion players, the wood blocks, and they start playing wood blocks, and they never stop in the piece. And they get faster all the time.
They do. I mean, this is what you're thinking about slowness. I mean, it seems incomprehensible because those wood block players just get faster and faster and faster throughout the whole piece.
But at a certain moment, almost at the end of the piece, they cannot go faster, and then they stop. They're hopeless. No way out. And in the meantime, the third percussion player in the middle, I call him Buddha, he plays very slow.
Buddha? You call him Buddha?
Buddha.
Okay.
He plays very slowly on the bass drums. Unga. This is why I was called actually Professor Unga in Princeton, I think. No, in Yale was that. And that is very interesting because the Buddha has and keep the same tempo all throughout the piece. And slowly by slowly, the trumpets and so they try to get up with the fast woodblocks. Yeah. But the strings seem to also do their best to get a little bit faster. But finally, at the end of the piece, it takes a lot of time and a lot of work, also for the listener, I must say, and for the composer. After a long time, about 18 minutes, finally, this hunka will be synchronized by all the groups, by the percussion, of course. And then, of course, there's a little horror ending, which I, of course, stole from the horror movies, that finally, when the hero has victory over the monster, and of course, he kisses the girl, and then we see that behind him at the door is the little monster, the son of the monster coming again. With other words, the piece ends with the percussion, start the piece again.
Okay, just to sum up some of this then, Louis, as the players come on stage here, if I've understood it vaguely, and I think vaguely is my own understanding, the sense that at the end of the piece, right, so you go through this journey, the woodblocks get quicker and quicker and quicker, all the other instruments are trying to keep up, and at the end you find only the same speed. So it's as if that moment you kind of go through the mirror at the point at which fast becomes slow and we end up being slow again. Is that something like it?
Well, who the winner is always the question. I think that's a philosophical question, much too difficult for tonight.
Okay.
But it's true that I am not sure. I think that the slow movement is the wise movement.
And it's worth saying, right at the start, you'll hear this contrast between like real horizontal rhythmic music, the woodblocks, and what the two kind of jazz bands, as you described them, play. And then in the strings who are assembling in front of us now, they play slower music. So right from the start, you've got this contrast between vertical and horizontal. Two different kinds of time, in a way. Two different, not just fast and slow, but different kind of ways of thinking, in a way. Louis, is this Stillheit still a really important piece for you? Is this still a piece that's important to the music you're writing now?
I found it very difficult to make, and you like the children, which cost are difficult. Also.
The most expensive children.
That's probably true, but it's also very difficult to play. Mm-hmm. So I thank you in advance for the playing. And then it's also difficult to listen to the piece. So
It's not that hard
courage.
To listen. They don't need courage. We all need in the role at home simply to let ourselves go to this, don't you? I mean, you just sort of strap yourself into this piece and it takes you on this roller coaster ride, no? Well, that's one way of thinking about it. Might be quite a difficult roller coaster.
I do my best, but the most important thing for composers in general is that you do something which you have never done before, and you try to do it as well as you can. And then you have to find out what is the next thing, which is the next difficult subject.
Perfect. Well, this is written in the early 1980s, 1983 and 1984. Louis Andriessen, thank you very much indeed. Round of applause for you.
Thank you.
And I'd now... It seems only fair to ask this large group of the London Sinfonietta and the London Sinfonietta Academy Ensemble to tune before this performance of Stillheit. Thank you. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome, ladies and gentlemen, André de Ridder to conduct Louis Andriessen's... please welcome, ladies and gentlemen, André de Ridder on stage right now at the Royal Albert Hall to conduct the London Sinfonietta Academy Ensemble, Louis Andriessen's The Snellheit.
Thank you.
Louis Andriessen's The Snelheit here at the Royal Albert Hall, the London Sinfonietta and the London Sinfonietta Academy Ensemble. I don't know, Louis, I didn't think that was so hard after all. You know, it was just like being at the centre of a kind of simultaneously slow but fast and irresistible explosion. Well, look, the last two pieces then in tonight's programme coming up. We're going to hear John Cage's 433, that absolutely non-silent, so-called, completely wrongly, silent piece, the last 4 minutes and 33 seconds. And then the secret of your involvement, you, the audience here at the Royal Albert Hall, is going to be revealed. Matthew Herbert, look, you've been sitting alongside me on stage here at the Royal Albert Hall, recording, remixing part of what we've been hearing. What do you require of the audience here to realise your piece, which is called Small, Smaller, Smallest?
Well, I was invited by the Sinfonietta to do what they called a live remix of it. And normally in electronics, that tends to mean someone behind a laptop checking their email and nobody out there quite knows what's going on. And so I liked the idea, really, that we are carrying around music boxes with thousands of sounds in them and recording capacities, things that John Cage didn't have, for example, or Mahler or whoever.
Mobile phones, of course.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Yeah. And so I like the democratization of carrying around something like this. So we have 12 compatriots from the newly reformed Radiophonic Workshop also out in the audience.
BBC with, Radiophonic Workshop.
Yeah,
reformed here, who'll be also on stage for this performance of Matthew's piece.
And also have clipboards and phones have been taking recordings. We're going to be playing those back. But the crucial part is the sort of, it's a call and response, and the audience is the response, and so we need it to work.
Okay, so what do you need us to do then? Because the performance of 4:33 will happen. André de Ridder, the conductor, will also be part of this performance, and at that moment, during the applause, tumultuous no doubt for 4:33, you all need to turn on your mobile phones or make them have a sounding capacity, yes?
Yes, that you're going to be given two cues by André de Ridder. The first one is to turn your phone on and to prepare a text message to yourself.
It can say whatever you like, any message to yourself you like. The reason that is important is you probably have to type in your phone number at that point as well.
And if you have an iPhone, because of the way that it's set up, it'd be good if you text the person that you came with rather than yourself.
Okay. Basically, text whoever you like. If you can see them, text them. Yes, good.
And then that's for iPhone users.
So that's your first job. Then the second job is on a cue from André the conductor. Don't worry, this will be frightfully. I'm looking at lots of worried faces. It's going to be frightfully simple. André will then turn round and he will cue sending his own message to himself or someone he loves in the London Sinfonietta, and you will do the same.
Yeah, the point is that you'll press send at the same time, and hopefully we'll hear 800 text messages arrive at roughly the same sort of time. So,
in this beautiful cascade of all the beautiful ringtones that you have programmed yourself into your phones. Look, Matthew, just before we hear 4:33, there's this huge, I think, complete misconception about John Cage's 4:33, which is that it's somehow, you know, a kind of gag or about something beyond being a piece of music. I mean, this is a piece of composition, isn't it, 4:33? Is there a relationship, though, between what you're trying to do in your piece and what 4:33 does?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's amazing still to me that this came out in 1952, and it's still as relevant now and important to restate, because in fact the world's got noisier, and that distinction between sound and music has become increasingly blurred, I think, and certainly if you walk down any high street, absolutely everything will have been thought about visually, about where the shape of the windows and the signposts and things, but absolutely nothing will have been thought about how it sounds. And so the idea of a sonic landscape is means something completely different now.
There's nothing more full than the supposed emptiness of silence we're about to hear in 4:33. Players of the London Sinfonietta and the London Sinfonietta Academy Ensemble are on stage. I'd invite them to tune, please. So, for this performance of John Cage's 4:33, please welcome on stage here at the Royal Albert Hall tonight's conductor, André de Ridder.
That applause from the Royal Albert Hall brings to a close our late night prom from the London Sinfonietta and the London Sinfonietta Academy Ensemble under the conductor André Derrida. Following on from cages 433, you heard Matthew Herbert's encore intervention, Small, Smaller, Smallest, in which 12 volunteers seated around the Albert Hall recorded sections of the concert onto their mobile phones, which were then played back. The presenter in the hall was Tom Service. This is BBC Radio 3, and now, a little later than usual, we join Verity Sharp for this evening's Late Junction.
Some bubble and squeak, or a little toad in the hole, a Lancashire hot pot perhaps, that would be nice.
Innocent slumber like this. Well, there's Natalie Merchant and her sweet setting of the poem The Sleepy Giant, which she wrote for her six-year-old daughter. What a great idea to arrange it using all those early instruments. And before that, first tonight, you heard the impeccable fiddle playing of Jenna Reed and the glorious tune Leaving Lerwick Harbour. And that's written by the late Shetland fiddler Willie Hunter, who was, in fact, her teacher. This album of Jenna's is called Morning Moon, and here's more from it.
Thank you.
march called Archie Neal Chisholm by Brenda Stubbart, and then a reel by Jenna Reid, which she calls One for Us. And those Scottish tunes just getting us in the mood for the fact that next week Lake Junction is going to be coming live from the Edinburgh Fringe. Do join us if you're there on Tuesday and Thursday nights next week. We've got lots of guests who are going to be joining us, including Chris Drever. He's going to be bringing some of his friends, and also the great Azerbaijani singer Alim Gazimov. You're listening to Lake Junction on BBC Radio 3 with me, Verity Sharp, and here's a piece of music from Kakassia in southern Siberia. So this is the land of the vast steppe grasslands and mountainous taiga forests, and also an area where the horse is king. This piece, played on the Hadayan, is called Horse Gallop.